Well, we have this candle up here because this past Friday, on Good Friday, we had a service here, and we extinguished this candle. And this candle is representing and represented Friday night Jesus, and how that this is Resurrection Sunday, that he is risen. And I want us to look at where the Bible talks about that, one of the places, in Mark, the 16th chapter. And so let's take a look at it together. It's Mark 16:6. It says this: "Don't be alarmed," he said. "You are looking for Jesus the Nazarene who was crucified. He has risen. He is not here. See the place where they laid him." Now, for many, many years, Christians, because of this verse, have kind of had a greeting that they would say to each other. And I want us to participate today and do this together. And here's how it's going to work. I'm going to say the first part. The first part is, "He is risen." And you're going to say the second part, which is, "He is risen indeed." And I want to, you know, this is the third service. You guys are the most awake. So I want you to go as loud as you can go with the answering back, "He is risen indeed." That's your part. All right, here we go. "He is risen."
He is risen
indeed. That's good. Y'all weren't all together, but I'm going to let that slide. One of my favorite Easter stories that I'm probably going to tell every year, because I just like this, is a story about a teacher on Easter who was teaching a bunch of children about Easter and asked the group of children a question. And the question was this: "Boys and girls, what was the first thing Jesus said to his disciples after he was resurrected on that Easter Sunday? What's the first thing he said?" And one little girl, she raised her hand. She knew the answer. And the teacher goes, "Yes, honey, what's the answer? What's the first thing Jesus said to his disciples after he was resurrected?" She goes, "I know. He said, ta-da!" I kind of just like that. It's just really, really good. We begin a new series of messages today called Getting Past Your Past. Let me tell you about the series. In this series, we're going to be talking about how God has a plan for us to get past our past. And this week, we're going to talk about how to break through, the power that we have to break through in our lives to deal with our past. And then next week, we're going to talk about forgiving hurts, how that we've been hurt in the past, and there's God's plan for forgiveness and how to do that, because forgiveness is pretty difficult to actually do. Then the next week, we're going to talk about restoration, how that in those situations that we can, because you can't always do this, but to restore the relationship that may be broken because of a hurt, somebody did something to you, maybe you did something to somebody else, restoring that. And then the last week, we're going to talk about going forward, the future that God has for you, so you don't carry your past into your present and into your future, but you deal with it so that you can go forward in your life and go forward in the plan that God has for you. So that's kind of our series that is ahead. So we're going to be talking about that, and we begin the series today, Getting Past Your Past. Now, here's the thing about Easter. Easter is not just, oh, it's springtime and the flowers are blooming and isn't it really nice? Easter is this. And the point of Easter is this: that everything that Jesus said about life and death and about our regret and dealing with our past and about our future, everything he said about all those things is absolutely true, because he is risen. He is risen indeed. And so that's the point of Easter. I want us to look at something that happened on that first Easter, that first resurrection morning. Now, I don't know if you ever thought about this, probably haven't, but I want to ask you a question today. Jesus, what's he going to do? Yes, he's crucified. 3 days later, he comes alive again. He's resurrected. What's he going to do with that day? How's he going to spend his day? Well, one of the things that he did is what we're going to look at today. One of the ways he spent that day is what happens in Luke 24. If you've got your Bibles, you can turn to Luke 24. We're mainly just going to be right there in Luke 24. It's also there in your outline. It's going to be up on the screen. Luke 24. And we're going to see what Jesus does for part of his day on Easter Sunday, and see how he spent that. And there's several truths we want to realize. And here's the first one: that my past is impacted by my present decision about the risen Jesus. In other words, your past, when you deal with it, and we've all got to deal with our past. We all have to deal with our past in some way or other. If we're going to deal with that, what impacts that is what we decide now in our present life about Jesus, and to understand that impact of that. So that's the first lesson. So let's go to Luke 24, and let's look at verses 13 and 14 and notice what it says. Now that same day, we're talking about Easter Sunday, two of them were going to a village called Emmaus, about 7 miles from Jerusalem. They were talking with each other about everything that had happened. Now, there's two people going on a walk, and they're talking about, it's been a big uproar in the whole city of Jerusalem. It's all been about Jesus and, you know, him getting crucified and everything. And so they're talking about it. And the conversation probably went like this. Boy, I wish, you know, I hadn't ended up that way with Jesus. I thought he was the guy. I thought he was the one sent from God, but obviously not so much. I mean, I wish he had been resurrected, but it's pretty bad. It just didn't happen. Wish that had happened. Now, let's go on and notice what it says in verses 15 and 16, Luke chapter 24. As they talked and discussed these things with each other, Jesus himself came up and walked along with them, but they were kept from recognizing him. Now, Jesus kind of does a ninja move, okay? I don't know. It's not in the Bible, but I like that term. It's kind of a ninja-esque kind of move here because all of a sudden he's walking with them, but they don't recognize him for whatever reason. All right? Just says they're kept from recognizing him. So Jesus enters into this conversation with these two people walking down the road, and he's basically got some, you know, what are you guys talking about? Notice what he says, verses 17 and 18. He asked them, "What are you discussing together as you walk along?" They stood still, their faces downcast. One of them, named Cleopas, asked him, "Are you the only one visiting Jerusalem who does not know the things that have happened there these days?" Now, here's the point. You and I can be physically healthy. We can physically see things fine, you know, visually. But we can be spiritually blind. Sadly, that's the case for anyone who has not committed their life to Jesus Christ. They are spiritually blind. But it's not just those folks. It's folks that maybe have committed their life to Jesus Christ, but aren't following God's plan and aren't seeing what God's doing. And as we turn our back on God, we also are spiritually blind. So at any point in our life, we can be spiritually blind. Well, these guys definitely are in that category of being spiritually blind. And I don't know how you would rate this on the rudeness meter, on how polite or rude you think this is, but it sounds a little rude to me. Because they go, "Hey, where have you been? Have you not been hearing what's been going on? I mean, everybody knows about this. Where you been?" Now, Jesus could have kind of zapped them right here. Jesus could have gone, "Well, yes, matter of fact, I have heard about Jesus. I am Jesus." He could have kind of got them right there, but he didn't do that. He's just kind of polite, and he goes on and says this in verses 19 through 21. "What things," he asked, "about Jesus of Nazareth," they replied. "He was a prophet, powerful in word and deed before God and all the people. The chief priests and our rulers handed him over to be sentenced to death, and they crucified him. But we had hoped that he was the one who was going to redeem Israel. And what is more, it is the third day since all this took place." Here's the thing. Everybody has a story. You have a story. They had a story, and they tell Jesus their story. And the key phrase of their story is this: "We had hoped." If you live long enough in your life, let me tell you, there's going to be situations where you're going to go, "We had hoped. We had hoped everything was going to be fine, but then we got this doctor's report. We had hoped our children would make these choices, but they went a whole different path than we ever thought that they would go. I had hoped, and then he told me he didn't love me anymore. I had hoped, but I've got this addiction that's a grip, has its grip on me, and I can't go forward. We had hoped for my future, but I lost my job, so I don't know. Everything's kind of up in the air." If you live long enough, you're going to have some things where you go, "We had hoped, I had hoped, I thought it was going to be this way, but it turns out to be a whole different sort of way." And here, these two are saying, "We had hoped about some things. We had hoped Jesus was the guy. I mean, that he was the Son of God. He was the Messiah. He was going to redeem Israel. He was going to get rid of these Romans who are over us right now and get rid of these guys. And he was going to be this big revolutionary who was going to just wipe them out and a big army and do all this stuff. And he just ends up dying like anybody on a cross. Just like all these other people have died on a cross." We had hoped. Just didn't happen. Just didn't happen at all. And they begin telling this, and let's go on to verses 22 through 24 and notice what happens. They keep talking about this. In addition, some of our women amazed us. They went to the tomb early this morning, but didn't find his body. They came and told us that they had seen a vision of angels who said he was alive. Then some of our companions went to the tomb and found it just as the women had said, but him they did not see. So they kind of go, but we hear this story. I mean, we had hoped, but we have heard this kind of story that something else happened, but I don't know what the story is here. What's the real story? Well, that brings us to the second truth. And the second truth is this. The Good Friday and Easter happened on purpose. Good Friday and Easter, it happened on purpose. It was part of God's plan. Let's take a look at verses, the next couple of verses there. This is verses 25 and 26 of Luke 24. Jesus is talking to him. He said, "How foolish you are and how slow to believe all that the prophets have spoken. Did not the Messiah have to suffer these things and then enter his glory?" Now, it sounds a little insulting. Jesus is not trying to insult them. He's trying to help them understand. And he begins to explain to them what's really going on here. And he points back to things that were predicted about Jesus and all that sort of thing. And let me just tell you, in our own lives, this will happen to us. And I know it's happened to many of you, where you think you've got it figured out. You think you know the story of what's going on. And then in a moment of blinding clarity, you see things how they really are. And Jesus is explaining to them so they'll see things like it really is. And to kind of unpack that a little further, I want to tell you one of my favorite stories that kind of talks about seeing things like they really are. There's a couple that had been married for 60 years, had a great marriage. People looked up to them and respected them. But one day they got a really bad report, and the wife's health was just failing. In fact, the doctor said there is no hope. And the whole through their marriage, they had this great marriage and all this great trust and a great relationship. But there's one thing that was going on. There's one secret that there was, and it was this, that the woman, the wife, had a shoebox. At the very beginning of their marriage, she had said to her husband, "I'm going to have the shoebox in the top of the closet. And never, ever ask me about the shoebox and never open the shoebox, no matter what." And he had never looked in the shoebox. He had never opened the shoebox all these years. But he had thought about it, and so he thought, this is the right time. He goes to his wife's bedside and goes, "Honey, I think it's time that you tell me about the shoebox." And she goes, "Okay, you're right. I need to tell you about it." Well, he opens up the shoebox, and inside the shoebox are two crocheted dolls and $90,000 in cash. He's going, "Wow. Well, what's the story?" She said, "Here's a story. When you and I got married 60 years ago, my grandmother came to me and said, 'You know, it's not good that when you get mad at him that you hold on to it. You need to let it go. And so when you get mad at him, what you need to do instead is crochet a doll and just let it go.'" And the husband, I mean, he's fighting back the tears. Only two dolls after 60 years. I mean, that's amazing. He is just going, "Wow, that is," I mean, he's just broken up over it. He says, "But I understand the dolls now, but tell me about the $90,000. She says, oh yeah, that? Well, every time I got mad at you, I crocheted a doll, and then I've been selling it at a craft fair for $5 all these years." Sometimes you think it's one way, but then it's a whole different way. And this is what's going on with these two that are walking down the road. They think they've got it figured out. They think they know the story. Jesus is going, "No, you don't really. You don't really know what's going on here. And I want you to understand what's really happening in this situation." You see, Jesus says, "Let me tell you. Let me explain it to you in this situation that's going on right here." So look at verse 27. And beginning with Moses and all the prophets, he explained to them what was said in all the scriptures concerning himself. And here's the story. Here's what's a big part of the story. We have different names for it, but at the very core of the story is the Bible says there's a problem. And the problem is sin. We all want to go our own way. And because of that, God sent Jesus to take care of that payment for us going our own way and the sin in our own lives. And it led to the cross. And so Jesus is saying, what if? What he's basically saying to these two is, what if that crucifixion was not just Rome killing another criminal, but what if it was God's plan from the very beginning to deal with sin and death and our past? What if it was that instead? You see, Good Friday, the cross, crucifixion, on purpose. Easter, Resurrection Sunday morning, on purpose. It was all part of God's plan from the very beginning. And that brings us to the third truth. And the third truth is this. And this is the main point. It is this. That Jesus changes lives and gives hope. Jesus changes lives and gives hope. Now, let's look at now verses 28 and 29, same chapter. And notice what it says. It says this. As they approached the village to which they were going, Jesus acted as if he were going further. But they urged him strongly, "Stay with us, for it is nearly evening. The day is almost over." So he went in to stay with them. Now let's keep going. Verses 30 through 33, it says this. When he was at the table with them, he took bread, gave thanks, broke it, and began to give it to them. Then their eyes were open, and they recognized him, and he disappeared from their sight. They asked each other, Were not our hearts burning within us while he talked with us on the road and opened the scriptures to us? You see, they saw it was Jesus. I don't know what it was that made them realize it's Jesus. Maybe they saw the scars on his wrists from when he was nailed to a cross. I don't know what it was, but for whatever reason, they saw things clearly. All of a sudden, they see what's really going on here. And then Jesus is gone. So they go this moment where everything changes, and they've got to do something about this. And they said, you know, we knew something was going on. We felt it. We had a sense of this, but now we understand. Now we understand what's really going on. And they see the point. The point is this. This is Jesus. He is really alive. And because Jesus is alive, God has defeated death. God's defeated sin. God's given us power for our past. We can be forgiven. I mean, it's all true. And it's not what we thought it was going to be, but it's better than what we thought it was going to be. It's totally different, but even better than how we thought it might be and part of God's plan. Now let's go on to verses 33 through 35. It says, they got up and returned at once to Jerusalem. There they found the 11 and those with them assembled together and saying, "It is true, the Lord has risen and has appeared to Simon." Then the two told what had happened on the way and how Jesus was recognized by them when he broke the bread. You see, what's going on is Jesus really is risen. He is risen indeed. And because they understand that, Emmaus is about 7 miles from Jerusalem, and they're going to go back into town. They've been walking all day. A lot of walking going on. They said, it doesn't matter. We've got to go back, and we've got to tell everybody what happened. We've got to tell that Jesus really is alive. We kind of heard a rumor. We thought, no, that's crazy. But he really is. That was him. And we've talked to him, and we're going to tell everybody. And they go back and tell everybody it really is true. That Jesus was crucified by Rome, but because he was Jesus, he didn't stay dead. Because he was the Son of God. He was the Messiah. And because of that, he is risen. He is risen indeed. And they want to go and tell everybody. Now, here's the thing. Everybody's got a story. You've got a story. You have a story that you're basing your life on. And we have choices about that story. You and I can decide what we're going to do about the story in our lives. We can make choices. And there are lots of choices. The world's going to give you some choices. One choice is pretty popular. is a choice of this, that really what does matter, I mean, we hear about it, we see it, we feel it, and it is true. This is one choice to say that this is true, that, you know, you just need to go for money and power and status and, you know, get as much stuff and get as powerful as you can get and make sure everybody kind of looks up to you and go for that and that's it. If you get that, you're good. Go for that. That can be your story. That's one choice. Another popular choice is to say, you know, there's not anything other than you're going to live this life, you're going to live for a while, and then you're going to die. End of story. That's the end of it. Now, I don't know if there's much hope or meaning there. I did Gene Dean, one of our church members' funeral yesterday. And I got to tell you, as a pastor, doing a funeral when someone has no relationship with Jesus Christ and there is no hope and there is no meaning is one thing. But to do Gene Dean's funeral where here's someone who had committed their life to Jesus and had lived that way their whole life and it had this big impact. I mean, here was this lady, as I went to her home, who could barely speak a few days ago. And the thing she wanted to talk about was, I want to pray for this person. I want to pray for this family member. I want to pray that my family gets things right with God. That's the only thing she wanted to talk about. And she could barely talk about those things. That's full of hope and meaning. But you have a choice. And one of them to say, hey, this is just, there's no real story other than, hey, you live, you die, that's it. That's one choice. But there's a third choice. And it's really the choice about Resurrection Sunday, and it is this. That, you know, it's true. He is risen. He is risen indeed. And because he is, you can be part of that story with the story of your life. That you can base your life upon that fact that it really is true. And because of that, your life can change. And Jesus wants to bring life change into our lives. The mission statement, the vision statement of Crestview is this: helping people experience life change through Jesus Christ. You know, one of my favorite parts of our staff meeting on Tuesday, which we have a staff meeting every Tuesday, is that we share God stories. We share some ways God is working, and they're mainly stories about how lives have changed. And I want to tell you one of those. I got permission to tell you this, and this is a story of a couple who were coming to this church. Now they've moved to another town, but tell you a little bit about their story. They had come to this church because a family member invited them. They had never come to church in, well, really ever. And they never really wanted to. To be honest, they said, you know, I don't really have any need to go to a church. Don't really want to go to a church. But for whatever reason, they came that one time with this family member. And then they started coming kind of more often, checking things out, figuring out things, seeing what they thought about this, seeing what they thought about that. And over a period of time, there was someone at his work and someone at her work that began to just pray for them. They told them about it, and they said, really, you're praying for me? That's kind of crazy. I've never had anybody pray for me. Oh, yeah, I've been praying for you. I know you're trying to figure out some things about your family. They had been together for about 9 years, had 2 children, and their relationship was kind of coming to a crossroads, and they needed to figure out some things about their relationship, whether they're going to stay together or not stay together, all that sort of thing. Along the way, over a period of time, they decided, you know, we're going to commit our lives to Jesus Christ. We're going to make that decision. We really think it's what we need to do and what we want to do. And so they did that. They got baptized in this church, because that is the next step. After you commit your life to Christ, then you're baptized. That tells everyone that you've made that commitment. So they get baptized. As a period of time goes by, and then I get a phone call. Say, hey, John, I just want to ask you, would you mind, we've been kind of just figuring out our next step, what we need to do next, the next things that we need to do to go toward God. And so we just think we want to get married. Would you do our wedding? I said, I'd be honored to do your wedding. That'd be awesome. The wedding was great. It was a really neat wedding. It was outside along the banks of a river. It's really, really neat. But it is one of those funny wedding stories because, and I have several of them, but this is one of them, where they were doing in the wedding, you know, that deal where the bride and the groom have the sand and they pour the sand, you know, into the one container. It's really a neat picture, and it's really great. There was one problem, though. The wind was blowing at about 30 miles an hour. So everybody in the front row had blue sand all over their face. So you kind of knew who was the family members, because they all had, all during the reception, they're kind of brushing off their eyebrows and all this kind of stuff, because they got blue sand everywhere. But it was a neat thing. We had set up there at the wedding a little thing to Skype to other family members who couldn't be there, and everybody got to be part of that. It was just a really great thing. And now they've had a third child, and I kind of keep up with them still, even though they're kind of far away now. But we keep up with each other a little bit. And God's just doing some good things. Has it been perfect? No, they've had some struggles. But you see, they have a power now that they didn't have before, because they have the power of the resurrected Jesus to help them deal with their life. And so that brings us to, and I want to finish with, our key verse for this series, which is found in Ephesians chapter 1, verses 19 through 20. And take a look at it with me. It says this. It says, "I also pray that you will understand the incredible greatness of God's power for us who believe him. This is the same mighty power that raised Christ from the dead and seated him in the place of honor at God's right hand in the heavenly realms." Now here's the story. You are not here today by accident. You have a God who loves you and created you, but he loves you more than you even know. Now there is a problem we all got to deal with. We all like to go our own way. We like to do our own thing. We don't want to follow anybody's plan. We don't even follow our own plans lots of times. We sure don't want to follow God's plan. And the Bible calls that sin. We all have a problem with it. Because of that, God said, "I'm going to take care of that. Give you an opportunity to have forgiveness for that by sending Jesus to a cross. He's going to die, but then he's going to live again." And because of that power, the greatest example of power in the history of mankind, of the human race, Jesus coming alive. He did things that no one had ever done. He said things no one had ever said. And he was raised. He is risen. He is risen indeed. That you and I have the opportunity to say, you know, that story that took place, I want that story to be part of my story. That yes, he died on a cross, but because he was Jesus, he didn't stay dead. He is risen. He is risen indeed. And we all have the opportunity to have that as part of our story. Now here's what I'd like to conclude with today. If you would take out your connection card, it looks just like this. And if you turn it over to the backside, I'd like for us all to do this, because as your pastor, I think it's real important for me to know the spiritual condition of our church. It's important for you to know that. Now let me just, I'm going to just be, put it out on the table, cards on the table. Here's the thing. There's no hidden agenda here. There's no trick questions. There are no wrong questions. No wrong answers here. We're not going to do anything with this. No hidden agenda with the answers you will give us here in just a moment. There's only one of these answers. We will follow up with you. No one's going to show up at your door. No one's going to send you emails. No one is going to do any of that kind of thing. Send you a bunch of letters, all that kind of stuff. None of that's going to happen. Except for one of them. One of them, we will do that. But let's kind of go through that. The first one is, in your spiritual life, where are you at? Is it A? And it is that I have already believed. I've committed my life to Christ. I've committed my life to Jesus. I have already believed. If you've done that, would you just mark A? B is that I'm considering this. B is going to be a different answer. B is going to be I'm believing today. I am believing today. Maybe you've done that several months ago. Maybe just today. But you are believing today. If that's where you are, would you mark B? And I got to tell you, here at Crestview, we have lots of folks that are in that category, category B. And we always want this to be a very safe place. And God has just, it's a great honor and a blessing that we have a lot of folks just checking things out. And then they believe. And maybe you're in C. Now C is that, what I just mentioned, you're considering believing. You are checking things out. You're not sure yet. You've still got questions. We want you to feel very safe in that process. And we have a lot of folks that are checking things out. You're considering believing. And then if you would, if you just be honest enough and candid enough to say, hey, you know, I'm not A, B, or C. I'm D. I don't believe. That's just where I am. And I want you to feel very safe and just be able to say that. Just go ahead and mark that. Now, if you'll mark this and then at the very end of our service, you're going to turn that in. And the only one that we're going to follow up on as far as what you mark here is going to be if you mark B. I'm believing right now. I'm believing today. I've just believed recently. And we'll see information about how to grow as a Christian and give you some of that as just tools for your own life. All right, here's what we're going to do. We're going to finish our service with having a time of commitment. And how we do this is I'm going to pray. And then after I pray, we're going to stand. We sing a commitment song. And during that song, if you'd like to talk to anyone or maybe get someone to pray with you about anything, any spiritual commitment, anything we've talked about already today, maybe to say, I'm ready to go all in here, crest you and become a member. I want to sign up for the next baptism day. That's May 5th. Any of those kinds of things, you can do that by just going out those doors and visiting someone. They'll have a name tag on and be glad to talk to you about that. So you have the opportunity to do that during that song we're about to sing in just a minute after I pray. So let's pray together. Father, I thank you for Easter. Father, I pray that you would draw men and women to yourself, and I pray that we would be able to trust that you really do love us, and that we would pursue you. I thank you for all those that have checked B today, who have said, you know, I am believing. I want to commit my life to Jesus. And I thank you for all those folks in that category. And I pray that you would help us realize that you do love us and you have a plan for us. And realize how that you give us an opportunity to let the story of the resurrected, risen Jesus be part of our life story. And help us to make that commitment today. And that's our prayer in Jesus' name. Amen.